This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, sitting in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for listening. In the 1980s, in the midst of the war on drugs, school districts started enlisting local police officers to patrol their hallways. And that trend only grew after the Columbine High School shooting in 1999. School officials claim that officers are there to ensure student safety. But what role should cops play in school discipline?
He grabbed me and tried to take me to the office. I started pushing him away. He slammed me down and then he handcuffed me.
That's Caleb Moon Robinson. Caleb is 11 years old. He's an African-American sixth grader from Lynchburg in Virginia. Caleb has autism, and his mom says that his diagnosis led to behavioral problems at school, which led to Caleb's arrest at Lincoln Middle School last November. Caleb isn't alone. Our next guest crunched the numbers, and it turns out that Virginia refers more students to police than any other state in the nation. Joining us is Susan Ferris, reporter for the Center for Public Integrity. Susan, welcome.
Thank you, Todd.
First, Virginia, such an outlier. It has a rate of these types of referrals by police of kids, young kids, some as young as 4 years old, to the courts that is three times the national average. What's going on in Virginia?
What we found is when we drilled down in Virginia, we found that the state isn't really keeping track of what these referrals are for. The national data doesn't say. There are numbers of referrals, and they could be arrests. They could be tickets or summons to court. A referral doesn't have to end in an arrest or charges. But what we found in the districts that we looked at more closely is that there are a lot of arrests and charges that end up getting filed in juvenile court. These are for kids who are in middle school often. Some of the numbers were quite startling. In one district, we found that kids who were under 10 were accused of assault and were written up and sent to court. Five children under 10 in one district, Chesterfield, were accused of making bomb threats. And you have the case of Caleb Moon Robinson in Lynchburg, who was accused of disorderly conduct and felony assault on a police officer. Because he had walked out of class without permission, the school police officer assigned to his school was sent to get him, and he tried to direct him, apparently, into the office and grabbed him. And Caleb struggled with him and used some bad language, and then he ended up arrested.
You talked to Stacy Doss, who's Caleb's mom.
And I'm like, well, why is it a felony? And he stated to me it was because he was an officer. And because Caleb fought an officer, that escalated the charges. And I thought, Caleb is 11. He is autistic. He doesn't fully understand how to differentiate the roles of certain people.
Susan, that's Caleb's mom. Another mom in your story was told directly by a police officer, I do arrest fifth graders.
That's right. That was in Henrico County near Richmond. Fifth grader named Elijah Coles Brown was reprimanded by a school police officer who lectured him and asked him if he knew what the meaning of assault was. And this was after, I hesitate to call it an incident, but it was what the school considered horseplay in the cafeteria. Apparently, the other boy's family contacted the police, and Elijah's mother felt that he interrogated him.
One of the things that you found, though, Susan Ferris, is that many of these problems the schools would prefer to be handling, like the kind of school discipline that I think a lot of us remember from our own school days or expect for our own children, but that cops in these schools operate independently. The principals and vice principals don't feel as though they have any sway over what the police are doing at all.
This isn't something people want to talk about very freely. The districts that I contacted mostly sent statements about this, what their policies were. But I was surprised when a number of them said, the police don't work for us. They work for the police department. And the police are the ones who decide if they're going to file a criminal complaint, if a crime has been committed. And some of them suggested that there is some discussion at times, but I got the feeling that they do believe that the police are the ones who are the ones who make the decisions ultimately.
Now, one police officer did speak with you. He's Don Bridges. He's with the National Association of School Resource Officers, and he does some training.
As long as there's nothing where there's a weapon, something that's going to cause immediate public harm, charging of a student within a school setting should be the absolute last resort.
Last resort is what he told you, Susan Ferris. But going back to Chesterfield County, in your story, 3,538 complaints that police filed over 3 years, a staggering number, many of them for disorderly conduct.
That's right. Simple assault or disorderly conduct. And more than half of the students sent to court were Black, even though Black students are only 26% of enrollment. And more than half were children 14 or younger.
The Department of Education in Washington has a civil rights division, and you spoke with the leader of that division.
Black boys in particular are suspended and expelled from schools at rates that are, most recent data is about 3 times the rate of their white peers. Black girls are more likely to be suspended and expelled from school than most boys and any other girls. And students with disabilities are subject to discipline at rates that well exceed their peers without disabilities.
That's Catherine Lehman. She's Assistant U.S. Secretary of Education for Civil Rights. She spoke with you, Susan Ferris. Do you have confidence that the federal government, for its part, which has a minor role probably related to state governments when it comes to education policy, see a real problem here?
Well, you're right in that states have their own policies. And in fact, school districts are often autonomous in how they conduct discipline policies, although there are state laws and there are federal laws, especially civil rights laws. They're concerned about it. What they do is usually approach a district based on a complaint that a parent may have filed, or looking at their own data that they've collected and deciding that there are some suspiciously disproportionate numbers. And they approach a district and try to work with the district and reach an agreement. In fact, in Caleb Moon Robinson's district last August, an agreement was reached with the Civil Rights Office of the Department of Education to reduce the suspensions of Black students.
Susan Ferris is a reporter for the Center for Public Integrity. Her story about school discipline premieres this week on Reveal, a public radio show from the Center for Investigative Reporting and the Public Radio Exchange. Susan Ferris, thank you.
Thank you.
And we want to hear from you. How do you think schools should be disciplining our kids? From Massachusetts, respectfully, our school resource officer is part of the school, lives in the community, attends events, and interacts with students. Respect breeds respect. And this from New Jersey, you cannot discipline kids in public schools anymore. Parents won't allow it. There's no support for the classroom teacher. Principals and superintendents just want to keep their job. So if a kid gets in trouble, there are no actions taken. If the schools do try to correct a situation, parents throw around the dreaded sue word. Kids know that now, and they have the upper hand, and they use it.
This is Ray from Arlington. I think that children should be taught how to resolve disputes in school. Having an officer on site is good for security, but they should not be part of the disciplinary practice at all.
Call us at 8778-MY-TAKE to share your thoughts on discipline in schools or tweet us at The Takeaway.